Welcome to the January 25th Jupilize Me podcast. Jupilize Me. Woo! Hey there. So I am Addison Berry, and I have a whole posse of bots with me today. So let's go through and get some introductions before we dive in. I am here today with
Karen Stevenson
and
Joe Schindler,
along with
Andrew Berry,
not to forget
Kyle Hoffmeyer,
and last but not least
Swampy.
Woohoo! Yeah, we got a big group, but we have really interesting stuff to talk about today. We actually got a suggestion, or actually just a list of questions from Keyboard Cowboy, and about becoming a contributor to Drupal and like what are the various blockers that are out there and some of the questions that they had about, you know, how does this work and how do people who've already contributed, how did they get through those things and how do they do that? So what we're going to do is go through those questions and just sort of talk about all of our experiences in terms of contributing and focusing on the, well, you know, what do things mean? Where do we get confused and how have we worked through stuff? Before we actually dive into that conversation, though, I will just hit on our news real quickly here. Videos on Drupalize Me, we started a new little mini-series with Kyle on working with lightboxes. So we put the first three of those out this week, and then next week we're going to finish up that series because it's a short little series, but covers a couple of different lightbox modules and like what that means and how to set them up on your site. And we're also all working on a whole bunch of videos we're going to record in February on stuff like Entity API and Git and SAS and Xen and lots of good stuff in the hopper. Events. So this weekend, seeing that this is the 25th, this weekend there is Drupal Camp Colombia in Cartagena. I totally said that wrong, didn't I?
No, that's fine.
Did I got close enough? Okay. I've been saying this for like the last three podcasts and I keep trying to say it right. PHP Benelux Conference is in Edegem, Belgium. And then Sand Camp is happening in San Diego, California this weekend as well. And then coming up in early February, we have a camp and a couple of other events. There's a Drupal camp in New Jersey at Princeton, New Jersey. FOSDEM, which is a really big European open source conference, is happening in Brussels, Belgium. And then there's Sunshine PHP, which is a PHP conference happening in Miami, Florida, that has a whole track on Symfony. And for those who don't know, parts of the Symfony framework have gone into Drupal core for Drupal 8. So worth our community checking out and being involved in. And then, of course, we also have DrupalCon Sydney's coming up on the first week of February, and the conference is sold out, so you can't attend the conference. They do have a waiting list, but I think it's a fairly long waiting list at this point. And there's a training day before the conference, which is now also sold out. So Jeff Eaton and I are going to be doing a workshop called Plan, Build, Launch, Real World Drupal, and that has sold out now, though, so you also cannot go to that anymore, and there are no waiting lists for the training. So, but wait, that you can still, if you are in the area and you still want to come down and hang out with a lot of Drupal people, you can still come to the events that are happening around it, and there's a sprint day, which is on Saturday, February 9th, and where the entire community just gets together and works on all kinds of stuff and makes stuff happen. And you don't have to be a coder. You don't have to do code stuff. There's documentation work. There's UX work. There's tons of stuff going on. And you can just kind of hang out and hack away with various people. I'm also going to be doing a community tools workshop that morning, which will get you set up with sort of the tools that we use, things like IRC, the issue queue, getting a local development environment set up. Like, what are those mysterious little pieces that everybody uses? So we'll be doing that. That's a free workshop on Saturday morning. So if you're around, still come down on Saturday and hang out with everybody. And that is what I have in terms of events and fun stuff. So let's talk contributing. And what how I want to do this, I'm going to actually read the email that we got, the question that we got from Keyboard Cowboy, and then we'll just sort of like walk our way through and discuss the various points that are sort of raised in here. So, I've been developing in Drupal since 5.2, but only within the last couple of years I've really gotten involved in contributing and trying to be more involved in the community. I know the docs are a resource out there on this are plentiful, but I would love to hear some Drupal experts talk about some of the finer points of collaboration and contributing, such as how they got started and their current process now. I don't have much free time, but I want to help with Drupal 8, and Drupal is the first collaborative system I've worked in, so removing the gray area around these points could be the push I need to dive in more quickly. And then we have 7 questions, and we'll try to get to all of them, generally we want to sort of just address that larger point. What's the process to create a patch, submitting, and testing? How does this process differ between contrib and core? And how do you work on big patches? How big can patches get, and how do you handle them? Can more than one person work on the same patch? And if so, how do you handle conflicts and working together? What exactly do each of those statuses mean in the issue queue? And who is responsible for changing the status of an issue? What was your biggest challenge in collaborating on Drupal projects? And how do you decide on a release date for a project, as in alpha, beta, RC, when working in the contrib world? So that's a whole slew of questions, lots of good stuff for us to talk about. But I guess first, like maybe for a little context, I'm curious how each of you all got started at all, like in terms of any kind of contributing that you did, like what was the... And without having to spend a lot of time on people's backstory, but like, was it because there was a problem you needed to fix, or was it because you wanted to have the warm and fuzzy feeling of contributing, or like, what was sort of that driving force behind what you ended up doing?
In my case, it was I started out in contrib, which is actually an easy place to start out, or an easier place to start out. It feels a little less scary to be working in contrib, I think. But in my case, I came into the Drupal world at the time when CCK was just launching. It was just out. There was something called FlexiNode that was out there before, but everybody was getting all excited about CCK. So I was trying to use it, and it was still kind of broken, and it needed a lot of work. And so I basically jumped into the CCK issue queue, and I was just trying to use it for myself, but I was trying to figure out how to fix some of the things that were broken, and started submitting patches, and kind of everything went from there.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about how I started, because it was totally different than how Karen started. For me, it was very much about solving a specific need. I was working on a website for the university student union that I was working at, and we needed to have table of contents on our pages. And at the time, this was the Drupal 4.7 era, there was a module that did table of contents, but it was JavaScript only. And the way it worked was it read through the web page in JavaScript and threw up a table of contents at the top of the page. But being a university organization, there was still the mandate at the time that everything had to work without JavaScript. And so it meant I couldn't reuse any of that code. It had to start all over again. I ended up writing a fairly simple input filter module that solved that problem. And it's really interesting because I don't maintain or have anything to do with that module now, but it's still got quite a few contributors to it. It's got all kinds of crazy features. And I was looking at the Drupal 7 version, and it's totally out there compared to, you know, the 50 or 100 lines I started with. But I'm kind of curious now, because I mean, there back when I started, there were lots of those sorts of specific functional items which didn't exist for Drupal or needed to be created. And so it was relatively easy to get started with contrib development, because you would just solve the problem that you had. And now with Drupal 7, there's just so much out there that people have already done. I don't know how easy that is. I'd be curious if anyone who's on the podcast who sort of started later than I did has any perspectives on that.
I don't know. The thing is, though, for me, so like the way I got started contributing was a little unusual, I think, in that actually the first stuff I did was on Core, but it was part of the Drupal Dojo getting started up, and there was this, basically we were trying to find simple things for people to get started with. And so one of the things was to go through and do coding standard cleanup. And this is before, you know, things would have happened completely automatically with that kind of a thing. But so, but Coder Module did exist, and I ran through, but I had to do a lot of manual cleanup. And then I made a couple of simple patches, and those went into Core. But that wasn't like, in terms of like, I did that and it was like a project I did, and then I kind of ran away and didn't do anything else in Core, because that felt manageable and I didn't really know where to go from there. But what I ended up doing actually was becoming a maintainer of a contributed module that already existed. I don't think I've ever written a module from scratch that I've contributed on Drupal.org. All of the projects that I've ever been involved with, it's just been me helping out with an existing project, and or becoming a maintainer or co-maintainer for existing projects. And so in that sense, I think like maybe, yeah, creating something brand new, may not be as easy in terms of everything's out there. But I think that because there's so much stuff that is out there, the opportunity to help and jump in and get involved on the code side of contributed projects is still pretty broad. And there are tons of people who are contributing stuff and don't want to maintain it. They don't want to upgrade it. They don't want to deal with new features. So I still think there's a lot of opportunity in that respect. I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think starting a brand new project from scratch would be probably, well, questionable whether it's even necessary, because there are so much out there already. But there are so many modules that want co-maintainers, you know, need help with patching, need maintenance, whatever, perhaps need to be, you know, a big opportunity in the contrib world is that place where we start moving from one major version to the next, and we need to get the contrib modules ported. That's a huge push, and that's a place that people can jump in, and that's going to be coming up, of course, in Drupal 8. Is how we're going to get everything ported to Drupal 8.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My story is similar to Addie's, actually, in that I started out with doing core development stuff. Though I had been using Drupal for many years before I ever contributed back. There's probably a good like 2.5-3 years from the time that I registered my account on Drupal.org to the time that I actually posted something on Drupal.org. And I spent a lot of time really wanting to contribute and had a really hard time figuring out where it would be appropriate and where was an easy place to get started. And I have this like memory of coming home all the time and spending hours sitting in front of my computer reading the issue queue and getting all the way to the end of an issue and being like, well, that sounds cool. And then deciding there wasn't much that I could contribute there and going on to the next one, and just all this time spent trying to figure out what was going on and where I could help contribute. So finally, what worked for me was picking an area that I was really interested in. And for me, that ended up being image handling related stuff, because I was really excited about the possibility of that getting into Drupal 7. And I started out with just like a simple fix to a typo was, I think, my first contribution. And then my second contribution was like basically the image cache UI stuff that's in Drupal 7. So it was this huge, like, I totally jumped off the cliff, kind of like, I can't do this. And then I jumped off and was like, I'm totally going to do this.
What about you, Wompy?
Well, coming back to what you, Addy and Karen said regarding the amount of modules that are already there and need some help, I've seen this situation a lot of times in which people willing to contribute, they come to me and say, hey, Wompy, could you have a look at my module? I'm going to submit it to the approval process. And when I ask them, but is this really useful? I mean, are you actually going to use this, or do you actually find a use on this? And the answer is no. I just want to get into the community and have some commits, and that's when I tell them, why don't you have a look at some of the modules that are already there and give a hand there, because they are actually being used by many people and they need help. That's on one side. And then regarding how I started, it happened to me the same as Karen. I installed a module. It was FreeLinking, which is this one, this formatter that we use to reference issues within Drupal.org. And there was a bug on the installation, a critical bug. So at the end, I was lucky it was easy to fix, because by that time I didn't know much Drupal. And I simply had the feeling that I had to share this. So I made my way to create a patch and create an issue. I remember it was hard. I had to read quite a bit of stuff before I got the patch ready to be committed. And then that was the start.
Cool. And Kyle, you have made a commit on Drupal.org.
Oh boy, is this where I lie? I have not. It's actually... I've done some stuff on Drupal.org. I've been in some of the issue queues and things and just offered suggestions and stuff like that. It is my goal this year to be much more involved somehow, some way. So this actually podcast is very good for somebody like me, because I'm kind of in the same boat, if you will, where it's intimidating somewhat, but also at the same time, you know, like Wampy was just talking about, it's just cool just to say you did it, but it's probably even better to jump in and help out where help is needed versus just random stuff. So that is a huge goal of mine, and I'm actually kind of enjoying and sitting back and listening to everybody's stories about how they got started, because that's where I'm going to be in the year 2013. So I'm kind of stoked to get involved and I will. Scout's honor. So,
but you have, I wasn't lying, you have technically made a commit on Drupal.org, because you did for the sandbox in for the Omega series that we
that
did.
Is right,
for the yes. The 960 Robots Omega theme. I put the initial stuff up there, but Kyle did actually walk through all of the fun steps to actually make a commit to fix some of the stuff that was wrong on there. So you have technically done it.
Oh, my mom is going to be so proud.
Okay, so let's look at some of the more specific questions, just in terms of how the whole this process thing works. And the first sort of, I guess, kind of group of questions here is about creating patches, because that is sort of, you know, a lot of people think I need to contribute code, I need to contribute some new module or theme. And as we've just gone and talked about, like, that's not necessarily the way to get for a lot of people to actually get involved with core with core or contrib. And so you end up needing to work with patches and work with existing code. So,
And I would suggest that you ought to start by testing patches rather than creating patches, you know, and work your way up to creating patches.
Yeah, and getting a feel for how it all works. But so I guess, so just like, does anybody want to give like an overview? I mean, like, for folks who don't know, I mean, things like, you know, we use Git. Like, what is the system? How is the system set up on Drupal.org for people to be able to create and test patches?
Well, it's still pretty much like how it was back in the CVS days in terms of how patches get created. You make your changes, you use a tool of your choice to generate something, and you upload it to the issue as a file attachment in a comment or in the file attachment itself. If there's anyone listening who's used something like GitHub, it's a pretty different web interface in terms of how you actually commit patches. We don't do pull requests or branches or anything like that, really. At least in most of the contrib world, there's a couple sub projects which do work that way, but they're the exception and not the norm. And so, and when we talk about all the different ways to generate a patch, in the end, you're basically trying to get a text file that describes the lines you added to code and the lines you removed to code, and get that uploaded as a comment with what your changes are to an issue somewhere in Drupal.org.
We should also mention that we always patch against the development branch you're not patching against the last stable release. Some people get confused about that. You're always working on head, on the latest development code.
Sometimes if you're lucky, those will be the same. If there's been
a
release that is stable and there's been no commits since then. Sometimes if you're unlucky, there'll be 400 commits between the last stable release that was made 2 years ago and no one's actually using the last stable release. And if that's what is on your site, you have to really sort of do either two patches, one for a site that you actually want to run the code on that is maybe running a stable version of the module, and one to actually contribute back up.
But it's important to note that when you're testing patches, you want to test against the right branch, because I've run into problems sometimes when people try to test patches or comment on issues, and it turns out they're looking at a release that's out of date, and that doesn't work.
Right.
I normally have a look at when I'm reading an issue and I want to submit a patch or review a patch, I normally check what's the version that this issue is related with. If it's a specific version or if it's actually set with a development branch, because it happened to me, for example, with Devel module, patches need to be sent first for the Drupal 8 version. And I'm sure each module maintainer has its own rules to for this sort of stuff.
Right. That's actually one of the biggest issues with certain contributed modules, is that they follow more along with a core development model where they're already having Drupal 8 releases of modules. And these will typically be your developer-focused modules like Devel, which are incredibly useful for actually developing Drupal. And so odds are that the 8.x branch of Devel is totally different than the 7.x branch of Devel. And so in some cases, depending on how wide those changes are, you may not necessarily be going against what is all called the latest dev release, absolutely, but you may be just going against the latest dev release of the branch you're using. So this is a lot more obvious where there's still support for a Drupal 6 and a Drupal 7 module in something that you're using today. Vues is actually fairly similar between the two branches. But maybe a good example would be something like CCK, which still actually has a Drupal 7 project, if I'm remembering correctly. But it's very, very different than what's in the Drupal 6 project. And so it's entirely reasonable.
Drupal 7 is nothing but basically the code to migrate to the new field system.
Right. And so it would be entirely reasonable that you would submit a Drupal 6 patch and not even really look at the Drupal 7 version of that.
Well, so we, in discussing this, mentioned that, there's like this sort of the core model versus the contributing. Like, what to you guys are the biggest differences, just in terms of working with the queue and patches and stuff like that, between core and contrib?
Like, in core, when you participate in discussions in the issue queue, there's lots of other people involved and participating in the discussion and adding feedback and reviewing patches. And in contrib, the biggest difference is those discussions are usually between you and yourself. And like the issue just goes on and on with me talking to myself. And then at the end, someone goes, "This is great."
Yeah.
Yeah, there definitely is. And that's one of the reasons why if you have contrib modules that need to be fixed, that need patches, it's really helpful to get people out there, because there are not as many people looking at contrib modules as there are. Although core is obviously still important. We need core contributors also. But that's true.
Yeah. It actually brings up an interesting point in regards to when you're helping to maintain a module that doesn't have a large community of active contributors with it. One of the things that I have found is a good best practice is, even if it seems like it is just you talking to yourself in the issue queue, if you're doing work on a module, it makes a lot of sense to still file issues and tag your commits against that issue and describe your thought process and your debugging and anything that you had to do in the process of that issue. Because then when other people are coming to evaluate your module, they get a bit of an insight into your process, and they might be encouraged by that and say, "Oh, look, this person's already doing everything out in the open, and I want to help them out." If you just do commits by yourself and completely ignore the issue queue, first of all, someone might not even realize that there's activity going on. And second, even if someone does, unless your commits are or your commit messages are long and descriptive, there's a tendency for people to think that this is just someone working on their own and they're not open to working with other people.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is true. And I made that mistake early on of just going ahead and just because nobody else was working on some of the things I was working on. And I eventually realized it's really helpful to go ahead and file an issue and describe the problem and then describe the solution. And then people can discover that. And sometimes other people will come in and help you figure out how to fix it too.
And sometimes you from the future will find the information that you from the past left in the issue queue.
And also if it's not your issue, and I've this has happened to me over and over again. So I've got a contrib module that is not quite working the way I need, and maybe the maintainer hasn't solved the problem yet or whatever, but somebody has kind of figured it out, and they filed an issue and they described the problem and then they tried to figure out a solution and they described their solution and how they got there and all that kind of thing. And maybe it never got committed, but it's there and it's documented and you can find it and you could jump in and try to push it along, or at least you can see how to fix it yourself.
Related to this too, and related to one of these questions, like in terms of more than one person working on the same patch, like this is a really good point. When I was maintaining a module all by myself, I did the same thing where I would create the issue and I would talk with myself, do a patch so that other people could see it. But when you're talking about, contrib modules that do have a lot of people involved, or in particular core, when you have more than one person who are all sort of trying to tackle something together, how does that work? And like, what are issues that can kind of come up from that? And how do you deal with, you don't just go into the corner by yourself to work on this because there are three other people who are interested following this part of the conversation. Like, how do you make sure that you're not stepping on each other?
There's a field in issues which most people ignore. I think it's called assigned to or assigned. And it's kind of strange when you look at it as a regular user, because it usually just shows your name and no one else. And with any other project management system, you can assign issues to other people, not just to yourself. But it is really useful for some of those long, active issues where there's lots of people involved. If you are working on a patch at this moment there's been discussions and you are working on implementing those, it can be useful to assign the issue to yourself. So that way anyone else coming into the issue knows that, you are actively working on it. And then when you finish, even if that doesn't result in you uploading a patch, as soon as you finish working, unassign that issue. So that way people just don't think you're working on it for months on end. But I've seen that used effectively in some of those really long issues.
Sometimes. I think a lot of people forget to unset.
That's the biggest problem is that people never unassign themselves, even if they're not working on it anymore. Yeah. But yes, that is a good point.
And what about actual code conflicts? I've worked on this patch and I have all this stuff and somebody else did work on it and we both upload our patches and now it's all a mess. How do you actually deal with that? Do you just have to sit down and comb through the two patches and re-roll and make it clean and somehow, or
I try have a local Git branch that I then do a commit for every patch that is uploaded so that I can keep track of the diffs between patches, and that really helps in those situations because then you're able to see just the changes between the two patches.
So you basically create a separate branch for each one, right?
No, I create one branch for the issue. Unless there are known conflicts, if it's just an issue that's sequential, one patch after another. And I find this especially useful if I'm reading through and want to learn the process between, from how the first patch was posted, because usually they're really simple, to, the patch it comment number 150, that's 10 times the size. And so if you do one branch for the issue just locally, you don't have to push it anywhere, where you commit the changes from each patch on top of each other. You're able to use the Git log tools to review those. If you have patches that conflict with each other, then it is nice to have, you know, a separate branch that comes off of your issue branch. So that way you can compare those, because ideally those two patches that conflict with each other still have some common ancestor.
Yeah, I've come to the point of just doing separate branches. Some of this is probably just whatever works for you, but it's nice to have a branch with, here's the previous commit, and then here's my branch with the new commit, and then I can do a diff between the two branches and see what's the diff, and then I can post that as the interdiff. We should talk about what an interdiff is.
I was going to say the term that's used for this a lot on Drupal.org is interdiff, which is basically a diff, or essentially the equivalent of a patch, but it shows the differences between two patches, so that, you know, the scenario is, like Andrew was saying, this issue has been going on for a while, maybe in sequential order. Andrew did a bunch of work on it, and then Kyle came along and did a bunch of work on it, building off of what Andrew had already done, and I want to see the changes between the two. Or more often, you end up in a scenario where 80 comments in, someone comes along and does a really thorough review of the patch at that state and says, this is great. Here's a few minor things that need to get changed. And then you want to update the patch with those changes. And you want to show that you updated that and made those changes, but not make somebody, you know, reread the entire 2,000-line patch to make sure that you made those changes. So interdiffs are helpful in that case, too.
Lots of fun things to Google. I wanna hit on one other question, just talking about the issue queue, and then move on to sort of more bigger picture questions again. But because one of the questions in here was what do all of those statuses mean? And I don't want us to go through what the statuses mean. There's actually documentation, and we'll put a link in the podcast notes that takes you to the documentation page that explains what all those different statuses mean and, you know, when they should be set and things like that. But the other part of that question, which is interesting, is who's responsible for changing the status of the issue? And I think when I first got to working in the Drupal community and all the issue queues and realizing that everything basically that needs to happen happens in issue queues, I was daunted by the form. And there are all these things that need to be selected. And then, yeah, changing a status, it was just I'm a nobody. I'm not supposed to change it. So, but who changes it? How does it all magically work? Anybody want to take a stab at that one?
I remember I saw once a diagram with all the different statuses. And actually, when you are about to post a comment or create a new issue, there are a couple of links there that are really helpful. Which describe each of the different statuses that you can come across. To give an ideal scenario, an issue would start as active, and then from there, it would come to either fixed or won't fix by different reasons. Maybe it needs work. Maybe it needs review. If it needs a patch. I mean, it depends how the issue evolves. It will turn to one or more statuses over its life.
But who clicks the buttons?
I think it's
so if you add, let's say there's an issue, and you know somebody's reported a problem, and you think you know how to solve it, and so you create a patch. So you would upload the patch, and you would change it to needs review. So now that you're indicating with needs review that you want somebody else to look at your patch, because somebody else always has to look at the patch. And then if you look at somebody else's patch and you say, hey, this works, this solves the problem, you could change it then to ready to be committed. It's reviewed and ready to be committed. And we expect the community to do that. I mean, that's an indicator back to the maintainer. If something gets marked ready to be committed, that the patch has been updated and somebody has reviewed it and there is agreement. And sometimes people wait until two or three people have reviewed it and everybody's in agreement. Yes, this does look like it works. And then somebody goes ahead and says, okay, well, let's go ahead and mark this ready to be committed.
I think it's actually reviewed and tested by the community now.
Whatever. Yeah. That's right. Acronym it used to be ready to be committed. Yeah, they changed the language. Yeah.
They used, you're right. They kept the same acronym and changed the words.
Yes. funny. Yes. That's what it used to be. Right.
There's no like hard and fast rules about most of it too. And it varies depending on, you know, is it for a core or is it for a contributed module? And amongst contributed modules, like, who's the maintainer of it? And there's a little bit of each person kind of, to some extent, can say, you know, this is my policy for how things work. Definitely some of the statuses, you know, like reviewed or active or this is a bug sort of thing. Like, I would feel comfortable with anyone in the community coming along and saying, hey, I reviewed this and it works, and changing the status to reviewed. Some of the other statuses, though, I think are a little bit more reserved for project maintainers. Things like marking it as fixed or, you know, postponed, or those statuses are probably more at the discretion of the maintainer, because they're ultimately the one that committed the code and decided that, yep, this is fixed. I'm going to change the status to fixed. And you probably don't want to go and mark an issue in somebody's queue as fixed if you don't know enough about the problem to say, yep, this is fixed. And there's also the like user discretion too. Like, there are some things that it's obvious are like never going to be addressed or are just not an issue, and it's probably safe in some cases to just mark it as fixed or closed and kind of get it out of the queue, because in a sense it's just spamming someone's issue queue.
Yeah, or marking something duplicate is a huge help in the community. I would also, one of the things I often tell people when I talk about the issue queue too is, I mean, so you can change the status of the issue. Every time someone leaves a comment on the issue, you can change the status. And everybody who can leave a comment can change the status. And at the end of the day, if you change it to the wrong status, someone else can come along and change it back to the right status. Like, you're not breaking things. You might, you know, basically it's sort of similar to a lot of things, I think, in terms of joining the community and getting involved. And not just this community, but it's sort of an observation and sort of getting a lay of the land. And I think if you get involved in issue queues and you start monitoring what the kind of life of an issue, or you're involved in the discussions around it, you don't even need to be writing code. You can see how those things happen and when do people change the status and why did they change it. Really getting involved in a couple issues and seeing what that process is like is way more enlightening than trying to have people just sort of pull kind of random, you know, examples out of the air that you may or may not encounter. So, but at the end of the day, you're not going to break anything. I would say the main thing to not do is to close an issue. Drupal.org, once an issue has been marked fixed, will automatically close the issue after 2 weeks. And that's just so it can sort of stay on radar. The kind of default radar is, you know, open issues, you know, for a couple of weeks after, just in case somebody comes along and is like, oh, no, actually, it's not really fixed. We need to reopen this or something like that. So I'd say you should never manually set closed generally. Unless you're a maintainer and you're like, I just want to close this.
And even maintainers wouldn't do that very often.
Right. You really shouldn't. But so aside from that, you know, and that
one other thing that people should be aware of is don't change the title of an issue when you do this. It's not like a forum where every comment has its own title. People get confused about that a lot of times. The title of the issue should be, the only reason to change the title of an issue is if it's poorly titled and you're trying to fix the title. Right. Other than that, you should leave the title alone.
Right. Like, don't change the title of the issue to "I think you're wrong." All right. So
it's also good to not fork an issue. A lot of people change the title to basically change what it is.
Right. Oh, yeah. Change the direction of it. Right.
Yep.
So it's much better just to open a new issue and comment with a link to that, saying, "Hey, I think this is another topic we need to discuss."
Actually, that's another good point. Is don't do the kitchen sink issues. You know, just don't create issues that sort of like, and here's a list of everything that's wrong. Right. You know, it try to keep issues focused on one thing at a time. And if you have several things, they should be several issues.
And you can just refer to the other issues, you know, between each other. Yeah. Cool. Well, we've covered quite a bit just talking about sort of like patches and issue queues and like a bit about the mechanics without getting into tons of technical detail. Kind of like where we started with just like, how did you actually get involved? I want to kind of step back to a bigger question, which was in this requested list here, which is, what was or is your biggest challenge in collaborating on Drupal projects, issues, bugs, features, like actually working on those things? Anybody want to take a stab?
I remember I started following the Twitter module, which seemed to me that it was abandoned at that time. And I spent like 2 months fixing issues by myself. I even cloned the project to GitHub because the maintainer wouldn't fix them. So I was getting into every issue and saying, look, there is a fix here in GitHub. I have a copy of the module and I'm applying patches, because it got to a point that I needed to have some commits in there in order to fix other issues. And then I started bugging the old maintainers so they could also gave me a hand with committing some of the issues. And then after 2 months, I finally got Eton to make me a maintainer, and obviously gave me rights to commit everything I was working on GitHub already.
So that was like a long roundabout way because of just not getting a response from the other people that, were working on the project. Yeah, that definitely happens. And Drupal.org does have sort of mechanisms in place to raise those kinds of problems with the Drupal.org community, with the webmasters, and just be like nobody's doing anything and this isn't working, and you can actually take over a module if the maintainers are not being responsive. You can request to just actually become the maintainer yourself, and you can be given access. So, but yeah, that's definitely.
Actually, the Drupal.org webmasters were the ones who found Eton because I couldn't find him on IRC.
And on Core, I think that there's a different problem. I think one of the biggest challenges of working on Core is that things are happening so fast on so many different fronts. And so you may be like working on one issue, but at the same time, there's all these other things happening. And as you're trying to work through one issue, it's changing underneath you. Other issues, other things are happening. New stuff is getting pushed into Core that might break the stuff that you're working on. And so I think one of the big challenges of working on Core is you have to kind of keep up with what's going on and how it affects your issue.
That's one of the hardest things about working on Core in general, is just keeping up. Like, the volume of stuff that happens and how quickly it happens is so quick. At least for me, I find that unless I'm in a state where I can reliably say I'm going to spend, a couple of hours a week just keeping up with what's going on in Core, it can be challenging to contribute, because that, when I've got an hour a month here and there that I can contribute, I spend that entire hour just figuring out what happened since last time I looked at Drupal Core. Oh, that's cool. Well, I'll see you again in a month.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. You do have to really focus on that. And if you are just getting started on Core for Drupal 8, the first thing you have to do is get a local copy of Drupal 8 and just figure out what's in it, because it is way different than Drupal 7.
So one of the things that I've seen happen a lot that helps people get over that hurdle of not being able to track everything that's going on, and also just the only having a limited amount of time, is find other people in the community that are keeping up with stuff and that are very active, and kind of, in a sense, latch on to that person and help them out. If you see that Karen's going gung-ho on date-related stuff and you think, well, that sounds like something I could help out with, I'm sure that if you ping that person in the community and say, hey, I've got a free hour, what do you have that I can accomplish in an hour, and have them point you at something rather than spending your entire free hour just trying to figure out what you could possibly work on.
Yeah, and related to that, there's for Core stuff, there's the Core office hours. There's a Core mentoring team, and there's a whole website set aside, and they have office hours. I'll put a link in the podcast notes. But if you want to get involved there, it's a great resource for getting directed at something you can accomplish. Because I find that, like, I haven't actually worked in core recently. I don't even know if I had a patch in 7. And for me, when I go and I look at it, I'm just like, I don't have the time to figure out what's going on here. It's just overwhelming. But the core office hours are perfect because it goes through and pulls out things and has things sort of rated and ranked in terms of skill level and what kind of thing it is. And then you have people who are actually deeply involved and have a sense of what's happening that can direct you onto something you can just sort of focus on and actually feel like you've achieved something. Cause I feel like that ends up feeling like the frustration with core or even a really, like, I mean, you know, I've never tried to work in something like the views issue queue, but I imagine it can be quite similar, where it's just sort of large and overwhelming and lots of things going on. And I just don't end up feeling like I have the time to even figure out what's going on. So why get started? Which is why the smaller, mostly abandoned, hanging out in the side contrib world was how I, and even though I initial patch was in core, after that I spent a long time in contrib before I went back to doing anything in core again. Andrew, do you have anything for your
challenge? I think, yeah, for me, the biggest challenge that I had was figuring out how to not be overwhelmed by some of those large issues. And I was getting to a point where I was doing a lot of reading, like what Joe was talking about. You know, I would spend 2 hours getting up to speed on something and then be like, okay, well, you know, it's time to go to bed, Andrew, or time to actually get some different work done, etc. And I think it's really important to realize and to try and figure out what your strengths are and work towards them instead of just feeling like, oh, I need to contribute to the big patch that is, you know, going on in some era or some part of the Drupal world. There are tons and tons and tons of medium to small patches out there that just languish because other people don't review them. So if you're the sort of person where you have lots of small bits of time scattered throughout the day, you know, 15 minutes here and there, but not necessarily a week to spend working on something, there's a lot that you can do in terms of contributing just by going through and answering support issues in the issue queue, or reviewing patches and figuring out which ones are maybe good for totally new contributors to look like. There's the newbie tag, which I don't think we mentioned, and that's really useful for anyone who's new, where basically if someone who files an issue is like, okay, well, I know what needs to be done. This is, you know, a 5-line fix to fix this bug or change this text. Those sorts of patches are great for new people to work on because it allows them to focus on getting used to the issue queue and the communications processes and the tools used to generate a patch and not just the code itself. Trying to contribute on a really large patch as your first patch is probably not the best path to success. So looking for anything that's been tagged as newbie or tagging issues yourself as newbie if you think that they're relatively simple to fix is a great way to contribute as well.
Yeah, actually, I think that the tag is novice because I didn't want to be...
It's a little friendlier than...
Noob. So it's the novice tag. But
and
yeah.
One other thing is if you do spend some time, let's say there is one of these tangly issues that you're interested in because it's kind of right up your alley or it's really important to you for some reason, and you spend some time sort of sorting out what's going on in one of those long issues, one really useful thing to do is just update the summary, because a lot of the, you know, other people are having the same problem following that. So if you have sort of figured out what's going on and the summary doesn't reflect that, You can do that.
And summaries refer to the ability for anyone with an account to edit the initial issue or the initial post for an issue and summarize the comments underneath. And it's a super helpful tool for those threads that go on to 80 or 100 comments.
Or multiple pages of comments.
Yeah, totally. And if you can just – you spent – you know, 45 minutes reading all those comments and grokking maybe even just a little bit, but if you could put that into the summary so that the next person to come along doesn't need to spend 45 minutes extracting that information, it's super helpful.
Yeah, and there's even a little template. Like when you go in to do it, there's a link that can take you to a template that gives you like a good starter, like what is a good summary, what information should be there and stuff like that. So
I always like to recommend people find something that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. Like find some aspect of Drupal or some contrib module that really scratches your itch, because you're much more likely to, if you really want to get involved, it's a lot easier to do when you're excited about the thing, when it's maybe something that you have domain specific knowledge about, or even if you don't, it's a great opportunity to say, I'm really interested in learning more about how filtering things to make them safe for HTML works. I'm going to look into things that are related to Drupal's filter system. And rather than bouncing all over the place, I found, for myself at least, it was much easier to get actively involved when I said, okay, I'm just going to focus on this little corner of things going on in core over here. And it's great that all this other stuff is going on, and I'll kind of keep track of it in the back of my head, but my focus is here rather than trying to keep track of everything all at once.
We need to wrap things up. So I wanted to say thank you to Keyboard Cowboy for the suggestion and the questions. I know we didn't get to every single one, hopefully that helps with some direction on those topics and for other people as well. I also just want to make sure that I mention and point out, highlight the fact that this was very focused on code contributions, and there are lots of ways to contribute. For the sake of giving ourselves time to be able to actually focus on that, we stayed on this, but we will definitely be having another podcast to talk about other ways of contributing and roadblocks that happen there. And it, if nothing else, there's sort of an element of it's not code, and that's already a roadblock for a lot of people. But we will definitely be talking about that on a future podcast. And I just want to say thanks to all you guys for coming on, sharing your thoughts, and for your contributions. Thanks a lot. And I will talk to you guys later.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Cool. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.